Hi, this is Stephanie Manis's interviewer. I am interviewing Mrs. Ruth Hemm, H-E-M-M, in West Fargo, North Dakota. It is May 10th, 2011, and it's approximately 11 o'clock a.m. Mrs. Hemm, can you tell me a little bit about your background growing up?
I was born in June 1921 to my parents, Eugene and Emma Kickerts, near Davenport, North Dakota. I'm the fifth in a line of six children. I have four older brothers and a younger brother. I went to a country school at Davenport. That's where I started. And then my parents being tenants, they moved from Davenport to Wheatland, North Dakota, or it was near Castleton. And they lived there for, I think it was 12 years. And then they moved on to Chaffee, North Dakota, where they purchased their first farm. I was educated in a one-room school. And from there, I went to Castleton, to the Lincoln High School in Castleton, and graduated from there in 1939. And from high school, I enrolled in the nurse's training at the Bismarck Evangelical Hospital in 1939 and graduated there in 1942.
How do you spell your maiden name, Kickerts?
K-I-C-K-E-R-T-Z.
Okay. So you, did your parents move to Chaffee after you graduated from high school in Castleton?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you graduated from high school in 1939.
Right.
Tell me about the Bismarck Evangelical Nurses Hospital.
Well, it was a hospital owned by the Evangelical, it was a Christian hospital owned by the Evangelical Church. And I started there the 4th of September in 1939 and graduated in the 7th of September in 1942. We had to complete 3 years right to the date. You had to have 3 years.
Okay.
And it was, I think there were 29 girls in my class that started. And then you had a 3-month probie period, and if you passed that, then you were accepted into the school nursing. Three of our girls didn't make it, the rest did. And I enjoyed my training. It was a difference. It was my first experience to be away from home. And 200 miles back in 1939, 40 was a long ways because you just didn't go back and forth. And being my folks lived on a farm, they didn't have a telephone. So there was no way that I could call home and talk to them. And they came. I didn't get home. We registered in September, started in September, and my first trip home was in April of the next spring. So I hadn't been home in a long time, although my folks did come out once to see us. My training was hard for me. I had never been into a hospital other than to visit, and that was just once. So I was walking into this blind, but I wanted to be a nurse. That was the thing I wanted, and that's what my mother wanted. So I did make it, and for most parts I enjoyed it, but I was very, very shy and very quiet, and I kind of took everything that was handed to me and never just accepted it, but I did very well in book learning, but bedside nursing was hard for me to get used to. Taking care of the people, and well, I guess I just didn't have the personality for it because I was so quiet. Like the other girls who were good and chat, just kind of sit backwards and let it go.
So did you have to work real hard to be more outgoing? Was that it?
Yes, in time. You just learned to do that. You learned to be more outgoing and joke with it. I was very business-like, and that's what I thought nursing was. You know, you take care of your patients, but you learn. Experience teaches you a lot.
So, why nursing? What inspired you to go into nursing besides the fact that your mother wanted you to be a nurse?
I really can't answer that, other than the fact that she wanted me to be a nurse, and it probably was the cheapest education at that time, and the best that you could get for a young girl. Like, my tuition for 3 years was $100.
Wow.
And you got your uniforms, and of course, you had your lodging. You lived in the nurses' quarters. And that was very structured. And that was like you got up at 6 o'clock in the morning and you went to bed at 10 o'clock at night, because that was lights out. And you did your studying and you worked. And it was different than what you are at home and what college is nowadays. But that $100 covered your 3 years' tuition, got your uniforms. Oh, yes. And then we got an allowance each month. The first year we got $2 a month. The second year you got $3 a month. And the third year you got $5 a month. And you had the privilege of leaving it in. You could either take it and use it, or you could leave it in and that would pay for your books. So that's what most of us did, because it's 1939. The economics was bad, and so there was a lot of things that you couldn't afford, and you did. You made do with what you had.
So your $100 included your tuition and your uniform, plus they took an allowance out of there?
Well, we got an allowance from the hospital, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and then you had your living quarters. You lived in the nurse's home. It was all there. You got your meals.
And you paid extra for that?
No.
That was included?
That was included. People don't believe that.
That is absolutely unbelievable. And then what about your books? You had to pay extra for your books?
No. If you let your allowance in,
yep,
they kept it. By the end of your 3 years, you probably got the allowance for the last... You'd get paid the allowance for about the last 4 months of your training. That would have paid for your books. Well, you could buy a book for $7 or $5. Now my daughter-in-law, who was a nurse, said you couldn't even buy a book for $100 now. So it was different.
Wow. So tell me, the nurse, I'm curious, growing up, do you remember wanting to be a nurse when you were younger, or did your mother talk about it, or at what age did you sort of think about being a nurse?
I think in high school.
In high school.
Because you had to have, Latin was required. 2 years of Latin at that point in time was required. You had to take geometry, and you had to chemistry and all those classes. That was part of the curriculum. But, I could never figure out why I needed Latin. Never did me any good, or anyone else, but and other than that, I don't know. I just wanted to be a nurse, and that was it.
Okay.
I don't think I even knew what the girls wore or what they did. It was just, when we started our probie period, we wore blue uniforms with white collar and cuffs. And then after 3 months, we got our caps, and then we started wearing white uniforms. And the caps were our dignity. So you reached up to those caps, and you treasured them, going, you worked hard to get them. And we were always told, you don't ever drop your cap on the floor, because that's dropping your dignity. If you can tell me why, I don't know, but that's what we are.
And when did you start having hands-on care with the nurses during your training period? I mean, with the patients.
We were on duty. We started in September, and I think we went on duty, and we worked 2 hours a day, 2.5 hours a day. I think we started the end of October, like that. So we weren't there very long. But the two and a half hours a day, we either worked 7 to 9:30, or 4:30 to 6. Would that be right? It's 2.5 hours, and And then you had classes in there. So you were busy from when you got up in the morning to 6 o'clock. We had to be at breakfast at 6:30. Then we had chapel, and then you went on. You either went to your classes or you went on duty for just those 2.5 hours. But after you got your calf and your probate period was done, then you worked longer. Like 7 to 10:30 or 4:30 to 7 or something like that. And on weekends, sometimes you would work, not sometimes, but it depended on your schedule. You would either work maybe 8 hours, or by the time you were a senior, you worked 8 hours a day, plus your classes that you had.
Wow.
So you were busy.
Wow.
Just talk to these old gals, and I'll tell you
how
different it was then. I know Mary used to say, I just can't believe it, that this is what you did. But that's the way the ours was a 3-year hospital plan. The only 4-year plans in those days were at the University of Minnesota, and then the University of North Dakota started too.
Otherwise it was 3 years for an RN.
In the hospital,
okay.
But at the universities, then it was 4 years.
How would you rate your training overall by the time you graduated?
Well, when you compare the training now to what we did, we had a lot more bedside nursing.
Okay.
And we had to apply what we learned. We had to apply our book learning to our bedside nursing.
Okay.
And you just worked hand in hand.
Okay. So you graduated in September of 1942.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what happened next.
The hospitals in those days used their nurses. And when you got to be a senior, you were given a lot of responsibility. And then after our classes were done, that would be in May sometime, I was given the job of being the afternoon supervisor at the hospital. I worked from 3 to 11, and I was in charge of these. But we had just 3 floors in the hospital. I was in everything but the obstetrics was separate. And that wasn't included in this, but anyway. And then several of the girls were asked to be charge nurses on the floors. And so we learned how to be responsible. And after I finished training in September, I started doing the afternoon supervisor. And here you were in charge of these kids that you had been working side by side with, and then you were in charge of them. And each year they picked a different senior to do it, and why I got it, I have no idea, but I did. And then after I finished, graduated, then I stayed on with the same job, and I worked there for, I think it was 6 or 8 months, something like that. And then I went up to, I had brothers that were living up on the Iron Range near Hibbing, and so I worked up there in the hospital at Grand Rapids, and that was general duty. I worked there for a year. And then during that time, I had enlisted in the Army. So from there, Grand Rapids, I came back home for a while, and then I went into the Army in October of
44. So, tell me, where were you when you heard about Pearl Harbor?
I can tell you exactly where I was. We had been on duty. There were no televisions in those days, of course. And we had a living room on the main floor of the nurses' quarters. And in that was this big radio. And we had been at supper. And there was several of us. We were on duty, and we had been on supper, and we had time, so we went into the living room just to relax and chat for a little bit. And President Roosevelt was speaking, and he gave this address about and this day shall live in infamy. And I've never forgotten that. It was, you know, you stopped and you thought, what's ahead? We all have brothers. And, but anyway, that's when I heard Pearl Harbor, about what had happened at Pearl Harbor. And I can still hear Roosevelt saying, and this day shall live in infamy.
Did you have brothers that served in World War II?
Three.
Did any of them make it back?
Two. Can you stop for a minute?
So what was your brother's name?
My brother's name was Vern, and he was in the infantry, and he was killed in France. My oldest brother, Irvin, was in the Navy, and he was stationed in San Diego, and he only went overseas once, and that was on a ship that took troops over and brought him back. And my other brother was Roger. He was in the Engineer Corps, and he was stationed in the European theater, and he was, I think he was over there about a year when he came back. And he was, it was, and there were a lot of families where there were four children, and some people there were a lot more. And I was criticized for going in. They said, wasn't it hard enough for your parents that the boys were in, and you had to go too? I saw no reason why I shouldn't go. And most of the girls felt that way. We just certainly didn't go in for the glory of it. You went in to serve your country and do what you had to do.
When you heard about Pearl Harbor, did you have a notion at that moment that you might want to join the military?
I don't think right then, but by the time that we finished training, I think so. Because most of us had brothers that were in, and it was just something to do. I mean, it was... because it had a good build-up, and it was led to be an interesting life, and it was different, something you'll never see again, and hope you don't. But I don't know, I don't think I thought about it right away, but some of the other girls were going in, and the girls that were older than we were, that had graduated, a lot of them were going into. So it was, I don't know, I don't think anybody went in for the glory of it because you didn't know what was going to happen. Probably if you had known, you wouldn't have gone in. But, I don't know what else to tell you. It was just one of those things.
When you were in Minnesota, were you in Hibbing or were you in Grand Rapids? Where were you?
I was in Grand Rapids.
Grand Rapids. And how long in Grand Rapids were you thinking about joining before you decided to join the Army?
Oh, I think right after I got there.
Okay.
But it took a while. You didn't enlist and just, to begin with, I was 10 pounds overweight. I had to lose that. And I did. I lost it.
So they told you that when you actually went to go enlist?
When I went to for a physical, I had to lose 10 pounds, and I did in 3 months.
Wow.
It wasn't hard. But it, and I had worked up there a year, and then I quit and came home, and I had to wait about 3 months before I was accepted.
So did you go to the Army office in Duluth, or was there one in Grand Rapids?
No, I enlisted. I went to Fort Snelling, that's where I was.
Okay. And do you remember where you enlisted? Was it in Grand Rapids, or was it back home? Or
I think it was back home, and I filled out all the papers.
Okay.
I went to Fort Snelling.
Okay. And so you started in October of 1944 in Fort Snelling, and you had boot camp?
We didn't. We had to enlist at Fort Snelling, and then we were sent to Camp Carson, Colorado, for our basic training.
Okay. And how long were you at Fort Snelling then? Just for a few days?
Yeah, no, for a couple months, 3 months, I think.
3 months. Mm-hmm. And then your basic training was in Camp Carson,
Colorado? Colorado. Mm-hmm. And it's right outside of Colorado Springs.
Okay. And so during that 3 months in Fort Snelling, what were you doing there?
Well, we didn't stay at Fort Snelling. We just were sent there, and then we were sent on to Camp Carson.
Okay. And how long was your basic training?
3 months.
And it was just women together in basic training,
yeah,
right?
Army nurses.
All Army nurses?
Mm-hmm.
And then while you were in basic training, were you doing any hands-on at a nearby hospital?
Not basic.
Okay. And how rigorous was your basic training?
Well, we did a lot of marching and a lot of exercising. And we thought it was vigorous, but I don't think we did. We really don't know what to say. To be truthful with you, I can't remember a lot of the things we did, but we did a lot of exercise, we did a lot of self-defense, and we did a lot of marching.
Okay.
And we attended classes. But other than that, we did no nursing at all. And from Camp Carson, then we went to, we were sent to Fitzsimmons General in Denver.
And how many women were with you in basic training about?
I have no idea.
Okay. And at that point, were you keeping in contact with any of your nurses back home from the Bismarck Hospital?
Not then.
Do you know if any of your other nurses in your class ended up joining the military?
Yeah, there was 11 that were in different, in the Army and in the Navy.
Okay.
I don't know that any of them were in the Air Force, but I know that they were in the Army and the Navy. And then some of them had married and had families, and several of them worked in the West Coast at the defense plants.
Okay.
So they had emergency rooms, and I don't know if they had hospitals at these defense plants, but that's where several of them worked.
Okay. When you were back home and you were waiting to enlist, and you said some people gave you a hard time about choosing to enlist because you had brothers in the military, mm-hmm. Was it people in town that would say something to you, or was it relatives, or who said something to you?
It would be different friends that would say, why?
Okay.
Are you doing that? But, I know that a lot of people thought that, but they didn't say anything, not to me. A lot of it came to you secondhand.
Okay.
Which, if you're going to say it, why didn't they tell you all right?
Yes. Not really small town America, though, is it? Directness is not always their forte. And what about your parents? How did your parents feel about you enlisting?
They didn't object. It was hard, wasn't it? But, they wished me well.
And your two brothers that were back home?
Well, my brother that was killed was drafted.
Okay.
And there were two of the boys were home. Alfred, my younger brother, was home. And Vern. And then they, being that there were the two of them, I think Alfred was still in high school. And Vern was the older of the two, so that's how they did it. He was the one that was drafted.
Okay.
And my other two brothers, they were already working up on the Iron Range. They were working in the mines up there. But they were still... they went from Minnesota, where Vern went from North Dakota.
So Vern went from North Dakota, and then you had two brothers that were in the Iron Range that went ahead and enlisted. Is that it?
No, well, they either enlisted or
drafted. And then you had one other brother. Didn't you have five brothers all total?
Yeah, but he was married and had a child. And he didn't pass a physical. Uh-huh. They found a heart murmur.
Okay.
And he died 2 years ago. He was 93 years old, and they never found a heart murmur after that.
Okay. He had a full life, thankfully.
But he never could figure that out when they had this physical that he didn't have it, that he knew of. And he went to Fort Snelling for his physical, and they found a heart murmur there.
Okay.
So in one way he was glad, and in another way he felt like I should have gone too. The rest of them went. But
okay.
He already had a wife and a son. Well, my older brother was married, but they didn't have any children, so that made a difference too.
And your high school friends, did any of your high school friends, were they enlist in the military, or were they working in any manufacturing plants, or...
You mean the women?
Yes, the women.
I know there was three of them that went in as Army nurses.
Okay.
But about the rest of them, I just don't know.
And those three also went to the same Bismarck hospital? They went somewhere else for training? Okay. All right. So you were at Fitzsimmons for how long?
We got there in December, I suppose. And we left the end of March, so we're there about 3 months.
Tell me about Fitzsimmons.
Well, it was a big place, and it was at that point in time, it was a main hospital, and that had been a permanent place, and then they apparently built all these outlying wards, and that's where a lot of the GIs were. That were there on a temporary basis. And most of them that were there were recuperating and ready to go home, ready to be discharged. And it was as far as locale, it was a beautiful place. And we were treated real well, and I enjoyed it there. I worked on, it was a medical ward, where there's several of them. Oh boy. There was, they had been injured, and some of them, it was physical injuries, some of them were mental. And they were kept there until they were ready to go. Now, I'll never forget one man. The wards were big. They were like 24 beds in these wards and separated with curtains. And you'd come in there, and I worked nights. We worked 7 to 7 nights. And I remember coming into this ward, and it's just a young man in his early 30s, I suppose. Maybe he wasn't that old. And he said, "Now, when you come in at night, don't you touch me." His medications were 8, 12, 4, and 8, so there was a midnight, twice at night that you had to wake them. And they had bedside lamps, but they were hooked at the head of the bed, so there was no way you could turn them on without disrupting. And he said, and you weren't supposed to turn the ward light on, so you put a flashlight in your pocket and turn that on, so that gave you a light. Anyway, he said, "Don't you touch me," because he had been over in Italy, and he had spent a lot of time at the front, and he had spent a lot of time in foxholes. And when you're in a foxhole, you're always on the alert. Mm-hmm. And sometimes these fellows would come sliding in, and if they didn't have the password or whatever they were supposed to do, you'd probably think they were the enemy and do the best. And he said, "I'm just afraid if you come in, the nurses come in at night and touch me, I'm just liable to do something to you." And the sad part of this young man was going home to a wife and three small children. Mm. And he said, this is what worries me. You know, he said, I've got two little boys, and you know what they're like. And he said, what if I hurt one of them? I've often wondered about that man, how he ever came out. And he wasn't alone. There were so many of them that were in the same shape. But this is one fellow that I really remembered because he was so afraid he was going to hurt one of the nurses or one of the attendants there if they just touched him because he would wake up out of a sound sleep. So that was one of my first experiences where I learned what the war is really like.
So. And how would you give him his meds at midnight without touching him? You'd call his name.
And you didn't dare jump bump to bed because that would be the same thing, you know. As I remember, he was a very light sleeper and all you had to do was call him. But the other guys, you could go in and shake them. They didn't always respond. This one man, I don't know why I remember it, but he was so afraid he was going to hurt somebody, and what am I going to do to my family?
So it really hit home the magnitude of what these men would be living with.
And you don't forget that overnight. I mean, these men lived with them for a long time. And when you read about it in the papers, you can just picture what these men now that come back from Afghanistan and places like that. It must be. It's hard.
The tremendous trauma. It's hard to imagine them even be able to come back and live in society. Any other stories that stick out when you were there in Colorado?
Well, it was pretty much routine. When we were off duty, then there were different organizations that always had sponsors for something, and they had tickets for this. And so if you were free, there were so many activities in the city of Denver that you could go to. Like, I remember seeing Marian Anderson, this Negro singer. That was one of her first concerts that she had given alone because of being that she was black. And so that was kind of interesting. But there were a lot of things that you could do, and the public was very supportive of all the nurses.
And did you live in some sort of dormitories at the hospital, in nurses' quarters?
Yeah, we had nurses' quarters there. I don't know what they'd been before, but each had your, we had our private room.
And did you have a curfew as nurses, or at that point where there's no curfew?
I can't remember that there was a curfew. So just that you had to be on duty at time, on time. And it was really a nice place to be. There was a lot of, when we were free, there was a lot of places that you could go sightseeing and do different things.
So the men that came there, were they kind of on a longer-term rehab? Is that it?
It just depended on the person.
Okay.
What they had done.
And were some of them sent back to the front?
I don't think from there. I think they were discharged.
Okay. What kind of injuries did you see?
Ours was mostly a medical ward, so there weren't, we didn't see. Mostly ours was nerves and stuff like that.
Okay.
Mental. We didn't have any patients that were, but they were recuperative. Maybe they had fractures and things like that. But we really didn't have any people that had a lot of injuries that weren't going to be. Ours was mostly medical.
Did that include things like recovering from malaria or dysentery?
Yeah.
You had that?
Stuff.
Okay. And what about, were you using just sulfa, or did you have penicillin at your hospital at that time?
I think there was penicillin.
Okay.
I think sulfa was all.
Okay. And then in March of 1945, you shipped out, and tell me where you went to.
We went to San Francisco. We went out there by train. I think we were on that train for 2 days, something like that. We were parked in some station for overnight. They kind of... No, that was on the way home. I think we were on... It was 2 days. We were in a separate car. And they hooked you on the back of a train, and that's how you got hauled out of the car. And we were taken to San Francisco to Pier 17, I think it was. And that's the way we loaded on board ship. To go to the South Pacific.
And did you know before you got on the train that you were going to the South Pacific?
Yes, we knew we were going to the Pacific Theater. Our unit was had, so we were told that we were supposed to go to Europe. But the war was coming to an end over there.
Okay.
So they sent us to the Pacific.
And did you know you were going to Manila?
No, not right away.
Not until you were on the ship and you found out later on the ship?
We all had a pretty good idea where we were going, but you know, after all, you just had summer clothing, and that's what you took with you.
Okay.
Yeah. But, and we got on the ship at, let's see, 1st of March, we got on board ship. And we spent 32 days on that ship going overseas.
32 days?
Yes, ma'am.
Tell me about the ship trip.
It was a beautiful ship. It was a luxury liner that had been converted into a troop ship.
Okay.
It was the USS Monterey, and it was a sister ship to the Queen Mary and Queen Elizabeth.
Wow.
And there were... I guess 3,000 troops on board ship. And they took troops over and brought troops back.
Okay. So it obviously wasn't just nurses.
No,
it was men as well.
Yeah, there was 311, 312, and 313 General Hospital on there. And then there were a bunch of GIs that were.
So what does that mean, 311, 312, 313?
That was the name of the hospital.
Okay.
And I was with the 312s. And we were all sent to the Philippines, to Manila. And as I remember, we were on the north side of Manila. And there were the three hospital units were all in one group. Ours, there was... get this straight now. The 311th was I think 311 was general surgery. 312 was medical and surgery, and 313 was mental, was this.
And those were all from Fitzsimmons? Or they were from different hospitals?
They came from different places.
Okay.
But this one, there were three units at three different hospital units.
Okay. And so what were the conditions like? Was it a luxury liner? Were the conditions really good on the ship?
Well, it would have been. But... They had a Section 8, which is psychiatry, psychiatric part. And that's what our unit, our nurses were in, was a psychiatric ward where they had all these, the portholes weren't barred, but there were the doors were that you could lock so that...
Is that to keep the women safe on the ship from the men?
Well, no, it was so when they brought the patients, the residents, or the soldiers back from the foreign service, that most of them, that the people that were in that were psychiatric patients. And so that's what they were in. And that was our quarters, that's where our nurses were in. We were in that section. So we had there were 10 bunks. We had three beds, yeah. 3, 6, 9, 12. There were 12 bunks in that room that we were in, and then there was a bathroom for that. And of course, all the doors were, they were open and they were locked, so they weren't shut. But after when they got the patients to come back, I think they had to use those. But,
so your actual living quarters were where they normally kept the psychiatric patients?
Yeah, so we were in that section.
And was it for security reasons, to protect you from the men on the ship, or
no,
it was just where they had you stay?
That's just where we had to stay. And then those ships were in sections. And so I don't know how, I can't explain how it was, but anyway, there was, they could close off that section. But if there was a, if there was a bomb scare or anything like that, they could close off those sections by those doors between the units. I don't know if you understand what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And, but they were never, they weren't closed as long as we were there.
And then did they have any kind of supervisors to keep an eye on the women, because there was a lot of men on ship? Or did you have to worry about the men at all? Or?
Well, the men, the GIs were on a... Now, this was a big ship, you have to understand. And it seemed like that you never saw the GIs. In fact, you never saw the others unless you were out on the deck.
Okay.
Or you went to chapel and you saw them. Otherwise, you were kind of isolated as to the, to where you could go and what you could do. And there wasn't very much to do. You had two meals a day, which was definitely sufficient. And then you had chapel every day. And that was always nice. And otherwise, there just wasn't much to do. You just kind of... It got to be long. I learned how to learn play bridge, and I hated it, and I still do. But this is what you did. You just kind of, you could go out on the deck, and you could walk around, but you could not, you had to stay, all, or so much of it was off limits to what you, to where you could go. It seemed like we spent most of our time. You could go down to the PX, which was down into the hole, down into the hold of the ship, I guess it was. They, I don't know if that's what they called it, but anyway, it was down there. Otherwise, you were pretty much confined to your floor or your deck that you were on.
Was there any fraternization between the men and the GIs and the nurses, or were you discouraged?
No, we never saw them.
Okay.
We saw that. In chapel and places like that, that was the only place that you ever saw that got close to the GIs. Because you, and see, our dining area, the officers ate in what had been the VIP dining area when
okay.
the ship was a luxury liner. And
okay.
it went into the dining room for the officers. And I don't know where the GIs ate.
And what kind of a rank did you have as a nurse?
Second lieutenant.
And that's all nurses were second lieutenants?
You started at that. Yeah.
Okay, and then you could be moved up from that?
Yes, but I didn't move up. To begin with, I wasn't... In our group, we weren't in long enough. And if you would have re-enlisted, then you would have gotten a promotion.
Okay. And what day did you arrive approximately in Manila?
The 2nd of May.
2nd of May.
So it's after 32 days on it.
Okay, so President Roosevelt died when you were on the ship.
We heard it over the intercom, 6th of April. I'm pretty sure that's right.
Tell me, how did you feel that day?
I think everybody was pretty shocked, you know. But you're out there in the middle of the ocean, what can you do? I mean, it was just, you wondered what was next. Now, who's going to be? German took over. And, I mean, it was a very, they had a period of quiet. And I don't remember that anything else was done. It was just... you kind of wonder what's going to happen next. And I think now, every time it would happen, you'd worry a little bit more.
Were you still, even despite his death, were you still pretty confident at that point that you guys, the United States, was going to win the war, the Allied would win the war?
Well, I think so.
Okay. So you arrived on the 2nd of May. Tell me about your experience in Manila.
Well, we were unloaded and hauled at the back of a truck. We were hauled to the north side of Manila where our hospital was supposed to be. And as we were driving through Manila, the people were there waving and shouting and telling us how glad they were. I don't know if they were glad or if they were hoping that this was the end of everything. And the first, I don't remember how, we stayed in the quarter, our hospitals weren't set up completely at that time. And I think we were there about two weeks that we was. We lived in what had one time been a boys' school. And so we had quarters there. And we were pretty much confined to quarters. Could go out sightseeing if you had some way to get around.
And when you first came in and you were greeted by the Filipinos, were you with the GIs or were the nurses separate?
Well, the nurses were, we were all in there. In, this truck, and that was all nurses.
Okay.
It was an American. It was a troop truck, I guess that's what they call it.
Amongst the GIs. You had the nurses all in one truck, is
yeah,
that it?
It was the nurses. There weren't that many. There weren't any GIs on our truck, I don't think. But we were all headed to this boys' school, and I can't even tell you what part of town that was in. But it was a nice place, but it... to Manila itself was a mess. And, well, I think we were there about 2 weeks before our hospital was ready. And then we were busy. And we were 12-hour shifts. And when you're on your free time, you could go see sightseeing if you had the way to get around. And we did a lot of walking. And we... once in a while, you know, some kind soul from Liverpool would pick you up and take you where you wanted to go. And our quarters, there were, I don't know how many people were in our quarters, but it was comfortable. No air conditioning. And it got hot over there.
And it was brutally humid, too?
Yeah.
And when you say Manila was a mess, tell me more what you mean by that.
It was in the areas that had been bombed. There was a lot of rubble. And, you know, the homes were smashed downtown. I remember walking downtown Manila. And you walked on one side of the street, and you could look over to the other side. And in the middle was all this rubble piled up. And one day there were about four or five of us. You always went in a group. Or at least two or three. You never went alone, but usually it was more. And we were walking along, and we were on one side of the rubble, and there were a bunch of GIs on the other, and all of a sudden I heard somebody say, "Hi, Ruth." Here was a young man from Castleton.
That
we'd
you
gone
knew.
To high school together.
Oh, my gosh. What was his name?
It was Ben Reese, his name was. And we were... He was had been stationed in Australia, and they were on their way home. And he was a friend of my brother's.
Of Vern, or?
Yeah, it was Vern. Yeah. They weren't real close friends, but they were friends and knew each other and all this. And I couldn't believe my eyes, and he couldn't either. They were walking down the street. But he didn't have very long. He had, I think we talked about 10 minutes, 10-15 minutes, and then he had to go because they had been in Manila a couple of days, and they were on the way home. So
and it was it Ben, did you say, Reese?
Yeah, his name was Irvin Reese.
Irvin Reese.
But they called him Bing.
Bing.
Yeah.
So he was shipping out, so you just spoke to him for a few minutes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And when he got home, he said to his mother, I've never been so glad to see anyone in my life. He hadn't seen anyone from home for so long. And here we were. And after we got back, he was working in the cities and had his family down there. But Castleton has a, as so many other places do, has this memorial service every year. And Bing's brother and my brother, Vern, were both killed in Europe. They were the first ones killed from that Castleton area. So the VFW out there is named in their honor.
Aww.
So for years, we made it a point to go to that memorial service that they have in Castleton. And Bing always made it a point to bring his wife and family home, and so we usually saw him, and so that was the last year.
And what do they call the VFW there?
Reese Kickers. R-I-E-S.
Kickers. Okay. Wow. I bet your mother was thrilled to hear about your news when he got home.
Yeah, and his mother was, well, my mother found out through the Reese's. That's how the folks found out. That we had met over there. And it was kind of, it was such a surprise. You know, when I heard somebody yelling, hey, Ruth, what is this?
Wow. So tell me about the hospital.
Well, it was, I don't even know how many wards it had. But it was pretty well equipped. And I worked on the genital urinary ward. And it usually just one nurse. And you had attendants that worked with you. And then you had your ward officer. And I don't know too much about the other wards. I was on the same ward all the while that we were there. And the patients were all good. I mean, they were all very respectful and appreciated it. We're all waiting to get out and go back to duty.
So you were at a general hospital. It was not a field hospital.
It's the field hospital, and then there was a station hospital, and a general hospital. That's all they were
required. And what's the difference between a station hospital and a field hospital?
A field hospital, they're the ones that see the men as right as they came from the battlefield.
Okay.
And then they were transferred to the station hospital, and that was for further treatment.
Okay.
And then when they were in, had recuperated to the point where they didn't need all the special treatment. I mean, they still needed treatment and care, but then they were sent to a general hospital. And from there, they usually either went back to the front lines or were sent home.
From the general hospital.
No,
so if you were in the genital urinary tract or urinary section, yeah. You had people that had wounds to the genitals. Is that primarily what you're seeing?
Yeah, when they had bladder and kidney trouble and stuff like that.
Okay. Did many of them get sent back to the front line?
Well, I couldn't say the percentage. I don't know. A lot of them were anxious to get back to their unit. Others, no, they wouldn't go home.
So you were the only nurse that was working there at one time.
Yeah, on our ward.
That's okay.
How it worked. There was a nurse and I think I had three attendants or something like that.
How many patients would you have approximately in your ward?
Oh, I'd say 25, something like that.
So that's a lot.
Yeah, but most of them were ambulatory, and were able to get you up and around, and just There were no critically ill ones on our patient. And I don't think we had any that were really bedridden.
Okay.
But they needed medication and they needed attention and had to see that they were doing what they were supposed to be doing.
Okay. Now, what about, my research showed that penicillin was available in 43, some parts of World War II. Was there any penicillin available to you at the time?
You know, I can't, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I can't say.
And what did a ward officer do?
He was in charge of the ward.
But he had medical training? He was
a
physician? He was a doctor.
Yeah.
Okay. So there was you and the ward officer, and then typically about three attendants. Okay.
Ward boys, they called them.
The attendants were all boys.
Well, yeah, but they called them ward boys.
And why were they all boys?
Well, they were soldiers. They were GIs.
They were helping out in the hospital.
Yeah, they were medics.
So it wasn't like here where you have a female nursing assistant, typically. It was actually a medic that was there at the hospital versus working in the field.
Yeah.
Okay. So outside of Manila, how many field hospitals were there?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I have no idea. There weren't any, I don't think there were any field hospitals right close to Manila. But see, they were where the war was, where the battles were going on. There probably were, I don't know.
Okay. Now, in my understanding is that in April, by the time you got there, things were already looking pretty good in the Philippines. Is that correct?
Yeah, the war was coming to an end.
Okay. Any memorable stories at all? Either in the hospital or outside of the hospital, something that you'd like to share that stuck out?
We went to the trial of a Japanese general. General Yamashita,
okay.
And we did a lot of hitchhiking.
Okay.
And that's how we got to, there was about six of us that went. We heard about this trial and they said it was open to the American GIs if you wanted to attend. So somebody got a pass or something and so we had no way to get there, so we started walking, and there were the six of us, and here comes this old man, this old Filipino, he was an old gentleman, in an old beat-up truck, with a box on the back of it, and no windows in the cab, and he stopped, and he said, going this way, and we said, yeah, we're going.
He pointed.
And we got on, and he took us right to where we wanted to go. So we got away. And this trial was in an old building, and we had to sign in, and if you had a camera, you were supposed to leave it. But I didn't have a camera along, and a couple other girls didn't. But there was one gal, and why she did it, I don't know, but she got her camera in there. And was very brave and started taking pictures, and she lost her camera.
Wow, they took it from her. Did you go just the one day?
Yeah, that was the only day. I guess you could go other days if you were free to go, but that was the day that... But we couldn't understand anything. You know, they were talking Japanese.
I was going to ask you, did they have it translated or not?
Well, we heard some of the American officers that would talk, but we never understood what... they always had an interpreter sitting there.
Okay.
And so just a lot of Japanese talk. But it was kind of... This guy was so stoic, and he never, his expression never changed, and I don't think he, as far as we could tell, he never answered to anything.
Really?
Yeah.
Was he found guilty?
I think he was.
And he was executed, wasn't he?
I don't know if he was executed.
Okay.
But anyway, that was kind of interesting.
Wow.
But, and we got there just because somebody heard about this. Come on, let's go. And away we went. And that's the way you toured everything. We had a little, we had laundry girls. They were Filipino girls. And they would come and they would do your laundry, like your personal laundry and stuff. And they washed them in the water. I suppose it was a lake or a river, but they took it down there. And they had the whitest wash you ever saw.
Really?
They beat the daylights out of it on this rock. And I had a little girl. Her name was Deli. In fact, those lampshades there were made by her uncle.
Huh.
And I brought those back. It was a gift from her.
And she was one of the laundry people, Deli
was.
She was
one of the laundry girls.
Wow.
So that. I have pictures of that if you want to see them.
I would love to. When we're done here, I'd love to see the pictures. So she would come and do your laundry every day or once a week? Or
as often as you needed her. She had several girls that she did laundry for.
And did the hospital pay her or did you pay her?
You paid her.
You paid her. And what kind of pay did you get in those days? Do you remember?
It was very little. I had most of mine sent home. You could... I can't remember how much we got over there. You didn't need very much.
Mm-hmm.
And so... after I got home and saw my bank account, I was happy that I did what I did.
Good for you. So you had saved quite a bit.
So, but you just didn't need a lot of money over there. You know, those, in the Philippines, you bought pesos. You had pesos, and I can't remember what their value was either. But you didn't do a lot of shopping. So there was nothing. To begin with, you didn't have any place to put it. And if you sent it home, it didn't always get there.
Yep.
So you were just better off to. I bought my mother a beautiful mantilla and a few other things. And I didn't want to keep them over there because it was so damp. And if you had it packed away, it would probably get moldy. So I shipped it home. She never got it.
Oh, she did it. Is a mantilla like a scarf?
It's a scarf. They were handmade. They were just beautiful.
Oh, how sad. And she never got it.
She never got it. I know she would have worn it.
Yeah.
I know several of the girls got them, and they had wedding plans ahead, and that's what they wanted to wear.
Oh.
And I don't know. I know that one gal mailed them home. I don't know if it got there or not, but there was trouble with that. What happened to the stuff, I don't know.
Huh.
Sometimes you get stuff that you didn't care about got there, and what you cared about didn't always get there.
Yeah.
But there was so much... so many steps before it finally got to where it was going. But
Anywhere else? Did you go anywhere else outside of Manila, or did you pretty much have your day excursions in Manila?
Well, we went by boat. We went over to Corregidor. One of the officers, I don't know if it was from our unit or another unit, had somehow gotten a boat, and he was taking as many people. They would go back and forth from Manila to Corregidor, which wasn't very far.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got to go over there, and we toured. I can't remember. I guess we did tour around the island, but we weren't there too long. And then we, I can't remember too much about that. We saw Wainwright's Cave, and I can't remember where that was either.
And what's that, Wainwright's Cave?
Yeah, he was a general that had served over there. And
oh, the general, okay.
Yeah.
And he had an actual cave, or?
Well, that's where his quarters were.
Ah, okay.
But we toured that. There wasn't anything to see. No lights. You just had a flashlight that you showed around. I don't know why we even went, but it was where everyone else was going. So you had to hang on to the person in front of you and the person in back of you so you wouldn't fall off. It was interesting, but as far as history, you didn't there was this little walkway this way and walkway that way, which you didn't go through, you just went straight through it. But the room was, well, we saw Wainwright's game. Well, whoopee, what else?
It wasn't that exciting, huh? Okay. I have a few more questions for you. How did you feel? You were in a general hospital, so how well prepared did you feel for your nursing experience over there, given what you had in the United States?
It was pretty much the same.
Okay, so you felt very prepared.
Yeah, and we didn't, you know, just didn't have the facility. That's why all it was different. I mean, it was, you gave your medications, you did to the patients what they had to be done. Most of them were ambulatory. In fact, they were all ambulatory and could take care of themselves pretty much.
Okay.
And your help, your ward help was, they showed you a lot of respect.
And what was the conditions in the hospital like compared to back in the States?
Oh, there was no comparison.
Tell me more.
Well, it was these open buildings, and each one had their own bed, and they were covered with mosquito bar. There was no privacy. And I can't remember any trouble on the ward that we had. It was always... But as far as... And the equipment that you had was... A lot of times you just made do with what you had, but it worked. And of course that was... Ours was a recuperative ward. Like the medical wards and the surgical wards, that was a different story. They had good equipment.
Okay.
So...
What might be an example of equipment that you didn't have that you would have had back in the States?
Well, for our ward, I think we had everything we needed. But you always had what you needed, but it wasn't always the best equipment.
Okay.
And you always had a lot of it. But it's hard to compare unless you see it.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was open. I mean, there was just the wards weren't closed at all. There were no doors or no mm-hmm. windows. Everything was just open.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a hole.
Mm-hmm. So this is.
See, this is the main hospital right here,
mm-hmm.
and this is the chapel.
Mm-hmm.
And this is. This shows the patients walking around now. This is the main building, and these here. Are the outlying, some of these are the outlying wards.
Wow.
And when you work nights there, if you weren't assigned a certain ward, then sometimes you would have 3-4 wards that you were in charge of at night, and you had attendants that took care of it. All the patients were ambulatory, and you saw to it that they got in. So then you would walk back and forth. And of course, it was blackout. So there was no lights.
Because they were conserving energy, you mean?
No, because of the war.
Oh, because they didn't want anybody bombing on the...
Yeah.
So this is every single night it was blackout?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And on board ship, it was all blackout, too.
It was.
You'd see, all of a sudden you'd hear, soldier, drop that cigarette. You know, someone, they'd walk so close.
Really?
Uh-huh. Douse that cigarette is what they said.
So at night they were not allowed to smoke?
Well, they could smoke, but they didn't dare smoke out on the deck.
Oh, okay.
Or else they kept it hid.
Were you trained in firearms at all during your basic training?
No.
Okay.
The only thing we were trained for was gas masks. We had to try and get those put on.
Okay.
Or not kill yourself in the process. And here's a... We had to mark...
Let me ask you this about the hospital where you were. Did you guys do transfusions very often, or were those mostly done in the field hospitals?
I know they gave them. On our ward, I don't think we ever had any, but our hospital was more of a recuperative one.
Okay.
But I'm sure that the surgical and medical wards took them on.
Okay.
Not on my ward, we didn't.
And were any of the hospitals, you said there were field hospitals and station hospitals,
yeah.
Correct? Were any of them ever bombed by the Japanese?
Not that I know of. But, you know, each hospital had a big red cross on the top of it. I suppose you know that.
And they weren't supposed to bomb them, right?
They did, didn't they?
Yeah,
some were. But I think those were, they weren't in our area. They probably were on, I never heard of any in Manila.
Okay.
But I think on other islands they had trouble with that.
How many hospitals were in the Manila area, do you know?
Well, as far as I know, it was just the three. But, you know, they had converted, like there was this Santa Tomas. That was a boys' school, and that was downtown Manila. And that had been, they used that as a hospital. But that was mostly for the GIs that were there, because I managed to get dengue fever when I was over there. There was three of us, for some reason, and dengue fever is a lot like malaria, but it isn't recurring like malaria is. You know, you can be stuck with that for years. The temperature outside was 105, and our temperatures were 105, so they hospitalized us down in Santa Tomas, which had been a kind of a military academy before the war. And so there were, but that, I don't know what they called it, but that was just for the GI, the GIs were there, the personnel. Different Americans.
Okay. So it was called dengue fever?
Dengue.
It's D-E-N-G-U-E?
I guess so.
And so tell me about that. How long did you have that?
Well, I was in the hospital. The hospital had this 5 days. It never recurred after that. But you were just like a dish rag, you know, you'd run this high temperature for so long. And I can't remember what medication they gave us. It was something. I tried to find history about it, but I couldn't find anything, so I don't know what. But they were given. See, for malaria, they gave us this Adabrin that you had to take. And so you took that. And I don't know where we got this dengue fever from, but all of a sudden there were three of us that were sick, and that's what we had.
Did you take the medication as a preventative medication for the malaria, or only if you got it? You took it as a preventative.
Preventative.
Every day.
I think it was every day.
Okay. What was the best part of being in Manila?
Well, the friends you made while you were there. To meet the Filipino people when you realize that here in America, and they were Filipino, and they stuck up for the country, and you couldn't blame them for that. And there were not a bunch of deadheads. I mean, we visited, and in fact, in Jelly's home, we went, another gal and I, she wanted me to meet her family. So we went, and they had apparently had lived in a beautiful home at one time, but they were living in a, well, I suppose we'd call it a shack now, and she had four little brothers, plus Deli and a sister, and her mother and dad, and there was a, now she was a grandmother, I don't know whose mother she was, it was either the father or the mother, but she was there, and they were so hospitable, and so nice to us, and they fed us,
Not plantains, was it? Plantains? Were they fried like kind of banana type things? No?
Okay, it was orange. It looked like a muskmelon.
Okay.
I was going to say mango. Maybe I can't remember what they called it. But they were so apologetic that they were warm. They should be so cold. The mother said, it should be cold. It should be cold. But we had the nicest afternoon with them. Sat on them. Porch. We got into the house. There was just meager furnishings, and they had lived close to the university before that. I don't know how magnificent their home was, but I'm sure it was much nicer than with me. So that was quite an experience for us. For them to even accept us was something.
Was that the only Filipino home that you were invited into? And were a lot of the Filipinos living in a state of poverty because of losing their homes to bombs and stuff?
I think a lot of them did. They had no place to go.
Okay.
Now, her father, he was doing manual labor at that point. I don't know what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But he had been a professor before.
And did the university get bombed? Is that why he was no longer a professor?
I think probably that was, maybe it was taken over. And where they had to go to school or something.
Okay.
But she went back. I used to hear from her. I heard from her for years. And she was going to university in the Philippines. So I don't know if her father got back in or what the deal was.
Hmm.
I always wanted to go back, but that was not one of Bert's priorities, so we didn't go.
So you would have gone back if you had a chance.
I would like to have seen it, yeah. Because I know, you know, when you look at it, it was like before. See what it was.
Mm-hmm.
A mass of rubble. And just think of all the other cities that were like that. And Hiroshima, you know, there was nothing left of that.
Mm-hmm.
But people are amazed that they were allowed, that they allowed us to go there because of the radioactivity. But Bert had that thing checked, because that was a couple of years after. And there was no radioactivity.
And that was the little night light that you got there. Okay, so tell me, you were in Manila until when? Was it November of 1945?
Yeah, we left, because it took us 3 days to fly from Manila to Japan. Because the Air Force had to stop, and I think it was late here or something. And so we spent Thanksgiving Day and the day after that on this little island. Next day, flew us up the rest of the way to Kure Bay in Japan.
And what was the name of the island where you spent Thanksgiving?
I think it was Leyte. I'm not sure.
Oh, L-E-Y-T-E?
Yeah, I think that's right on the northern tip of Japan. Not of Japan, of the Philippines.
Okay, so you spent Thanksgiving there, and then why did you go to Japan?
Because the war was over.
Mm-hmm.
And they had There were hospitals up there, and they were, because they were rotating the troops to go home.
Mm-hmm.
So they would send this one bunch home, and then fill it with another. And our group happened to go up there, and we stayed at Kure Bay because they had no place to put us at that time. We spent a lot of time waiting to get to, and we were at Kure Bay for, I don't know. And then by Christmas, by December, by Christmas, we were at, because we spent Christmas at Kure Bay. But we lived in some quarters that had been, well, that was Kure Bay where we stayed at Christmas, and right after Christmas, then we went to Nagoya. And worked there for 3 months, and then we went home. But at Kure Bay, see, that was right outside of Hiroshima. It's close to that. But we lived in, it had been a Navy, something like the Naval Academy. That was one of the quarters that we were living in. And there was no central heat. You heated this big room where I don't know how many people were in. They had these little space heaters. And you bathed out of your helmet. And, oh, it was a great experience.
So you were just staying in Kure Bay. You were just staying in Kure Bay. You weren't actually working there until you got to Nagoya.
We went to Nagoya. That's where we worked.
And so it was a great experience in Kure Bay?
It was different. Here the war was over, and we were in a waiting period with nothing to do. And a lot of the places, a lot of the area was off limits to the Americans, so you really couldn't go around and do sightseeing. You would walk, but not very far.
Mm-hmm.
So you spent most of your days indoors and walk.
And is that when you went to Hiroshima, is when you were at Kure Bay?
Yeah.
Did they take like a whole group of you?
Yeah, they took these trucks where they load you in back, and you sit in the back, and It was cold. I remember that. I thought we were back in North Dakota. But I suppose they would put about 2 dozen in a truck and then take you around. And then you, when you got out into the area where they thought you could maybe find a souvenir or something, they'd give you about 5 minutes to get off.
So tell me about Hiroshima.
I don't really know too much about it, but there was nothing left. You know, and it was just everything was flat.
Did you see anybody out in the streets at all?
Oh yeah, there were people about. They did. I suppose there were officials of some kind, or but there weren't. Not residents weren't about there at that time. There was nothing there. It was all gone. Right out in the middle of one spot, there was this, it looked like the front of the church. It was standing, that's all that was there, nothing around it. But that's the way that atomic, that's the way the bomb worked. It didn't destroy everything above the ground more than it did under the ground.
And did you see any bodies, or they were all incinerated for the most part? No.
Well, see, this was, the bomb was dropped in August, and this was November.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone said, well, that's awful early to be there, but if it had been radioactive, they would have never let the GIs in there.
Mm-hmm. And what about, how did the Japanese treat you when you were in Curry Bay? Did you have any interaction with them?
No, they were scared to death.
I
think the Japanese people were afraid of the Americans.
You think so?
I don't imagine that the officials were and mm-hmm. and the people that were involved. But I think the citizens that you'd see walking, they just kind of look at you like, and just hope that you didn't say, or maybe they were waiting for you to say something, I don't know. But how can you speak to someone that you don't know their language?
Yes, exactly.
I don't know that we would have, but we just smiled at them and kept going. That's all you can do. But there was so much off limits that we couldn't, like, people wonder why you didn't do this and why you didn't do that. They didn't realize that the war had just ended and it was off limits, period. We
mm-hmm.
didn't go.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure anyone will tell you that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now it would be different.
All right, so tell me, Mrs. Hem, about Nagoya.
Well, we were in it was 262 Station Hospital. And as far as I know, I worked nights, so while we were there, it was 12-hour shift. And mine was a medical ward. And most of these, in fact, all of these GIs that were there, they were just waiting to go home. And but there was a smallpox epidemic there that we were not involved in, but there was, in one area, there was a smallpox, and several of the GIs lost their life before they got home.
Wow.
But, I don't know too much about that. I don't know how many there were or anything, but there was some that were supposed to go home but didn't make it. Well, they went home, but lived a life. But I don't know the percentage, and I don't know anything about that. So much of this stuff I forgot.
Mm-hmm. That's natural. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
And what were you doing? What kind of nursing were you doing in Nagoya?
Just most of the patients there were ambulatory, and we were charged medications and any other treatments that they needed.
Okay.
Just general duty.
Okay. And just getting the GIs ready to go home then?
Yeah. When the doctors decided that they were able to go, they were discharged.
Okay.
I don't know if they had to go in another staging area or not. So just
and how was the hospital conditions in Nagoya compared to Manila?
Yeah, a little different.
In what way?
The building was better.
Okay.
And as far as the medications and all that, I think it was pretty much the same.
Okay.
It was the same. And the stuff was... At Nagoya, we were getting a lot of nurses that had just come from the States. Now, I don't quite understand why that was that way. They were sending some over and sending some back. And these girls couldn't figure out how you could get along with the limited amount of equipment and things you had. But I mean, it's something that you did. And you didn't want for anything. It was just that it wasn't there in abundance like you have at home.
And were the buildings different? I mean, do the windows have actual glass windows on them in Nagoya? Or are they still open air kind of hospital?
Oh, no, they were. It had to be. It was cold there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was cold in Japan.
That's right. That time of year it would have been cold. So it was a different setup than in Manila.
Altogether. Manila, it was hot all the time. And you'd look up and the sun was shining and you'd look the other way and it would be raining.
Okay.
No kidding. It rained so hard that you could stand under the roof because there were no eaves or anything in the industry. You could stand under there and you could rinse your hair under it. It rained. So it just poured. And then all of a sudden, the sun was shining.
So just for like an hour or two, or 15, 20 minutes?
Just depending on how big the cloud was.
Wow. And then when did you leave Nagoya?
We left there. Got home in March. It had to be March sometime.
How did you come home?
By boat.
By boat. Same ship, or...?
This was the USS General Sturgis. It was a smaller ship. And we were supposed to go from... We took off from Yokohama. We didn't go to... We went from Nagoya to Yokohama.
Mm-hmm.
Because Nagoya was inland and Yokohama was a seaport. We were supposed to go to Seattle. And we got close to Seattle, and the weather was so bad, and the waves were so high, that they, instead of us going through Seattle, we went down to California, to San Pedro, California. And that's where we docked them to go home. And then we went to, by train, we went to Illinois. I don't know the name of the town in Illinois. And that was the separation station. And then we were sent by train to Fort Snelling, and that was where we were discharged and came home.
And how long were you in Illinois and Fort Snelling all total before
Fort
you went
Sheridan, home? It was Fort Sheridan, and we were just there, I don't know, a day or two. It wasn't very long.
And then at Fort Snelling?
Just there long enough to get discharged, and about a day, I guess.
And did your parents know you were coming home? And how did you get from Fort Snelling up home?
You know, I can't remember if it was by bus or train. I think it was by bus.
Okay.
And then there was no big to-do or anything. My dad met me at the bus. But, yeah, it had to be bus because my dad met me at the bus station in Castleton. That was all the fanfare I got.
How did you feel about going home? You were away about a year then. How did you feel about coming home?
Well, I was just coming home. I didn't know what was ahead. But I guess there was not too much about it. It was nice to get back into your own routine. And if we had been busier, you know, the last months of our time in Japan, or maybe if we'd had more freedom to see things and do things. It got a little long over there. So it was kind of good to be home.
And what did you go do then afterwards? Did you continue to be a nurse when you got home?
Yeah. I stayed home. My mother wasn't in the best of health, so I stayed home till September, I guess it was. And then a friend of mine who had been in service too, only she was in the Marianas, and she was a classmate of mine. We hadn't done enough, so we decided we'd take off. We got a job out in West Virginia. It had been a polio center for children. And the wages were the best of any that we could find, so we thought that's one place we can go and work and see the part of the East Coast. So we worked there. We were gone a little over a year. We worked there, and then we went to the VA in Washington, D.C. and worked there. and we came back to Fargo. But we saw a lot of the East Coast.
Wow.
Free time. Followed by bus.
Wow. Okay. And how long were you in West Virginia and out in D.C.?
We were there about 14 months.
And then you came back to Castleton.
Then we came back to the farm, and then she, Dee Dee wanted to go to California. But my mother wasn't very well at that time, so I thought I better, you know, I was the only girl. So I went to work at the VA in Fargo. And I worked there for 2.5 years. And then I went out to college, and I got the health center there for a year. And then I got married. And that was the end of my nursing career.
And but which college did you go to for
NDSU.
Health? NDSU.
I had the health center there.
Okay. And then you met your husband where?
I'd known him since I was a little kid.
Oh, okay.
But we got together when I was out at the VA, when I was out at the health center at NDSU.
And then you got married, and then you stopped nursing when you got married?
He didn't want me to work. But I've often regretted that I didn't stay working until the children came. But after the children came, and well, he said right away, I'll make the living, and you take care of the house and stuff like that. He was kind of from the old school. And when the children came, he said, I'll make the living, and you take care of the kids. And that's what happened.
So, Mrs. Hamm, how would you say that the war shaped your life and your views on things?
Well, think about that one moment. But I think it made me appreciate my freedom. And made me, I don't think that everything that the United States does is the best, but you still have your freedom.
Mm-hmm.
You can do as you, pretty much as you please.
Mm-hmm.
And there are laws that you have to obey, but if there aren't laws, this world would be a mess. And you can raise your children pretty much like you want. They have a chance for education. And I don't know, my mother had family in Europe. They were in Germany. And I remember her reading the letters that came from there. And they were under the Hitler regime. And you know, if you have that, you have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
We're here in the United States. You have everything. And it's your responsibility. And if you have the talent, the time, and the ambition, you can do just about anything. That's how I feel. And if you don't, and you make a mess of your life, it's your own fault. Maybe that's wrong. The schools offer so much here,
mm-hmm.
and yet people feel they have to go off to some foreign country to study, because they have an advantage to that, too.
Okay.
I don't know.
What do you wish the younger generations knew about World War II?
Well, I have always felt, and I've heard so many people say, World War II, they were fighting for a reason. They were fighting because to defend their country. Now, the war that they're fighting now, do they know what they're fighting for? And I think that they should know that the GIs, that the soldiers that went in those days, they knew why they were there, because if they hadn't gone in, Hitler would have come from one direction and the Japanese from the other.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, I think they should know that war isn't the answer to everything. But, I don't know. Sorry to say, but when Bert died, he had the pastor that did the sermon was, we'd known him since he was a little boy, so he knew us as a family. But anyway, he gave the sermon on the book that Tom Brokaw wrote,
mm-hmm.
The Greatest Generation. And he said that the soldiers in World War II, after the war, they came home and they rebuilt their life to what it was before the war. And he kind of felt that a lot of the guys that go now have a different attitude about the war completely. But, have you read that book?
I've read parts of it. I haven't read the whole thing.
Yeah.
In what way do you think their attitude is different?
A lot of them just, very bluntly, I can say a lot of them just don't give a damn.
About our country or about their lives?
About their lives. Think of that. They expect everything from the government for nothing. And not for nothing, but I mean to support them. And I suppose that would be normal too, but I don't know, when you think back to guys that were in World War II, they came back and they went on and rebuilt their lives, there wasn't not a lot of fanfare when they came home.
Mm-hmm.
But they continued on what they were doing and served their country and were proud of it.
And your two brothers, when did they come back from World War II?
Boy, I don't even know. I think they were discharged right after the war was over.
In Europe?
Well, Irvin was to see. Irvin Circus out of San Diego. I think they came home pretty much about the same time because Roger came home.
Okay.
45.
Mrs. Hem, did you have any contact with the enemies besides those three Japanese prisoner of war? And those are the only contact you had? Okay.
We saw them in the Channel Islands.
At the hospital in Denver?
In Manila.
In Manila, you did?
Yeah, the things. They called them guerrillas. And they would apparently there were some Filipinos that were allowed in the Chow Line, and then all of a sudden these girls went. But we didn't know who they were. We didn't have any
contact with them. Did you, while you were in Manila, ever hear about any unusual, if you want to call them, acts of compassion between the Japanese? I know they were very brutal on the most part to the Allied troops. Did you ever hear about any unusual stories where that wasn't the case?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
We had prisoners there that were on Corregidor, Death March, Bataan Death March.
Uh-huh.
We had some of those patients in our hospital. And to look at them, you know, they were skin and bones of a great big stomach and this gaunt look on their face. And we didn't have any on our board, but the other girls would say that they had been told, don't question them, let them talk. That was one thing that they said. They had no complaints about them. The men never complained or anything, they said. But I imagine some of them did, but the gals I talked to said that they didn't. We didn't question them. They felt like talking, you know.
Let them talk.
But I didn't have any direct contact with them. I saw them, but I didn't. And you just, if you were walking down the sidewalk and you met one of them, you just said, hello, and kept going.
With the Japanese you're talking about, or with the people from the Bataan March that Allied troops?
We didn't have any Japanese. So.
Okay. Anything else about the war that you want to talk about? Any other stories or any other things that we didn't talk about?
Haven't I talked enough?
You've done a fabulous job. I've asked lots of questions. Can you just tell me, Mrs. Hem, what year you were born?
29, 21.
So that would make you how old right now?
I will be 90 in June.
Happy birthday early.
Thank you.